This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. And signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Happy Thanksgiving to you. This is a Thanksgiving Eve production, and we are live. So if you'd like to chime in, we'd love to hear from you. And we've got two guests who have passionate beliefs about the world at large, and we are, of course, as they say, in interesting times. Susan East Nelson, former communications director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, a lawyer who's licensed, I think, in three states, and Mike Wolfe, the libertarian godfather who was with the Libertarian Party before it became a juggernaut in Louisiana, and it still doesn't win many offices in our state, but I think it has a bigger say at the table, largely because of people like Mike Wolfe who are there on the ground floor. 877-217-5757. And if you've heard Mike through the years, sometimes he's on the left, sometimes he's on the right, sometimes he's in the middle. Susan, mostly from the left side of the political spectrum, and today, as I picked up my copy of the New York Times, Brett Stevens, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, has a column, Susan, that says, "Can liberals survive progressivism?" And even James Carville has talked about the woke culture that he believes could derail the Democratic Party. Or do the Democrats have a problem?
I think the issue is the framing of the what progressives, liberals, whoever, what folks on the left want, and how, unfortunately, we tend to let the Republicans write the narrative more often than we'd like, because there are principles at stake: helping families, lifting people out of poverty, giving every person an opportunity to succeed, that are just core, basic, bedrock principles that will always be demonized by folks on the right.
Well, some people say Republicans are better at winning elections and Democrats are better at governing. And when we look at the national budget, for example, Democrats bring budgets down as far as deficits. Republicans cause them to spiral. And we had a disastrous presidency, 8 years of George W. Bush, and with the stock market actually lost ground. It actually lost ground. Compare that with the 8 years of Clinton and Obama and the 4 years of Trump. And it's certainly not a good statement for George W. Bush. And both Bush and Bush 1 and Reagan, the deficits went out of control. But Mike Wolfe, if you were to ask most Americans, they probably do not know this. They think the Democrats are the free spenders. Do the Democrats have an image problem, as Susan says?
Well, yes, they do. And they're causing it themselves. And the Democratic media ruins it also, but because they describe the party as highly socialistic and highly reliant on government subsidies and government intervention in the economy and in personal activities of every kind. I like to say that socialism is not progressive. I don't mm-hmm. accept at all the description of the one faction of the Democratic Party as progressive. But the media loves that term, and that's what they call them. And that bends people's minds. But, of course, on the other side, people react mm-hmm. against it.
I remember back in the day when politicians were not afraid to say they were liberals. But today you don't find many doing that, Susan.
Well, I think, you know, progressive was the softer, gentler word. You know, but at the end of the day, the policies are the same. And, you know, as far as wanting families to do better and creating the structure of government that allows them to do better. And I think we're going to see a lot of impacts from this infrastructure plan. And then if the Build Back Better bill passes, we're going to see a lot of impacts on families and lifting not just families out of poverty, but children out of poverty. It's really embarrassing that we are one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and we have so many children in poverty in this country.
Now, Mike, if you were to watch Fox News, these plans that the current president is proposing, and one of them has cleared Congress, they're the end of the world. The economy is going right in the ditch. And then if you hear Democrats on the other side, they say, look, this is what is necessary to get us out of a ditch that was caused largely by COVID and, of course, reckless spending by several presidents, mostly Republican presidents. What are your thoughts?
Well, for one thing, I think the reckless spending has been by Democrats and Republicans. You say mostly Republicans. You speak about small relative differences in the deficit, and you're always saying,
not with President Clinton.
The Democrats have been more frugal.
He left us with a balanced budget.
Clinton and Newt Gingrich. He and the Republicans produced 1 year of balanced budgets.
But it was going in the right direction every year under Clinton, and it started with an all-Democratic vote on his plan in 1993, fourth day of August, no Republicans supporting it. Al Gore had to cast the deciding vote on August 4, 1993, and that caused the economic recovery, the stock market to roar. It roared more under Clinton than any president in U.S. history, and we had a balanced budget, and interest rates were higher than they are now.
I beg to differ. You have to talk about causation. You talk about a few parts of a huge picture, and you can't attribute everything to one man's activity. So it's just much more complicated than that.
Well, it was a team effort, but Gingrich wasn't part of that team. Gingrich was a problem.
Gingrich was part of producing the balanced budgets, the 1.5 years they had them during the Clinton administration.
I differ because Gingrich voted against the plan in 1993, which caused the budget to be balanced because it stimulated the economy.
Again, when we talk about a balanced
and
budget.
And it raised taxes on the rich. Now, Susan, let's segue to that. Why is there this aversion to raising taxes on billionaires?
I'm not entirely sure. You look at folks who have said, very, very wealthy people who have said their effective tax rate is lower than their housekeeper because of the tax incentives or sheltering things that we have in place for them to defer their income mm-hmm. and not pay taxes. Yeah, I mean, if we've got billionaires doing a space race right now, and we've got children who are going hungry, that's a real problem.
All right. Well, Mike, should we tax those who are best off in our country? Should those of us who'd like to reap the same harvest they are be taxed at a higher level? What are your thoughts?
Of course, taxation should be changed in this country, especially the federal taxation. It's very out of whack. But and the richest people probably need to be taxed more. But I am very concerned about tax equity, that is fairness, a balance of taxation, regardless of income. I don't see that. For example, the tax preferences, the tax breaks, the special credits, the special incentives that are riddled throughout the tax code from start to finish, many of those need to be ended. I'll start with just one, capital gains. There is no reason why the capital gains should be taxed differently than ordinary income, but all of the Democrats and all of the Republicans want to do it.
And they would all, but
think
you got,
about
you,
doing
you know, you got, you know, you got, you have make a very good point. And Ralph Nader, of course, said both parties are part of the corporate elite in America. And you dance with who brung you. And Democrats, like Republicans, benefit from Wall Street and others who contribute to their campaigns. And it's hard to say no to people who are paying the freight. Susan?
Sure. But it's not just federal income tax. Here in Louisiana, the lowest percentage of income earners pay the highest percentage of their income in taxes because we have a regressive sales tax in Louisiana. And that isn't even taking into account the fact that most of the lower income folks are renters and they are paying a higher property tax by virtue of the fact that they're paying rent and the person who's renting them the property is not eligible for a homestead exemption. So we have a really, really lopsided tax system just here in Louisiana. And quite honestly, with the passage of Amendment 2, we just voted to make it more lopsided.
All right, 877-217-5757 is your number. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Susan and Mike. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is that how is it that Fox News gets away with lying? I mean, can we, how do you qualify for a license? These are our airwaves, and are violating our airwaves and using them to lie
actually,
to us.
Cable plays by a whole different set of rules. It's not our airwaves when it's cable news, and Fox is entitled to do anything they want to do, and I'm all for that. If they want to lie, they can lie. But people buy the lies, just like they bought the lie that Trump didn't lose the election. Mike, what about Trump? Did he really lose the election, or does he have a case that it was stolen?
Of course he did. Of course he did, and that's a horrible, treasonous contention, and every Republican that supports that man ought to be ashamed of himself.
Well, that would include Garrett Graves and Julia Letlow and yes. Steve Scalise yes. and Mike Johnson and John Kennedy, John Neely Kennedy, who turned 70, by the way, on Sunday and spent the week ramping up to that by attacking a woman because she was not born in the United States. He is a U.S. citizen, but he attacked her and accused her of being a comrade.
I heard your discussion of that on the air the other day, and I'll take Kennedy's stand on that. that woman is crazy. She has no business being controller of the currency. Well, and it's not because she was born in Kazakhstan.
All right. Well, that you've got a point. She's got some controversial beliefs. Why didn't he attack those rather than attacking her ethnicity?
I didn't hear anything except the one line in his questioning. What did he say next?
Oh,
he basically debased her, called her comrade, and then, you know, talked about communists and rejection. Essentially is where he went. That is so intellectually, this is my big problem with Senator Kennedy. It's so intellectually dishonest of him. The man has a law degree from UVA, went to Oxford.
Was not a Rhodes Scholar, by the way.
But
and cannot bench press his weight. But he's a pretty sharp guy.
Obviously, he studied and he's learned, but yet he is sold out to the lowest common denominator to make a cheap
point. All right, we're back. This is Jim Engster. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Happy Thanksgiving Eve on the right side of the political spectrum today, and I think he's mostly right, even though he occasionally is wrong. Mike Wolff, the libertarian, Mike Tiger Wolff, for those who know him nearly and dearly, and Susan East Nelson on the left side, lawyer and professor and former head of the Democratic Party communications apparatus. And something we have not talked about, and I've had a few listeners chide me, and this is one that, of course, sometimes we get much more heat than light, but it's worth a mention or two. Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges last Friday after pleading self-defense in the deadly Kenosha, Wisconsin shootings that became a flashpoint in the debate over guns, vigilantism, and racial injustice in the U.S. The 18-year-old Rittenhouse began to choke up. He fell forward to the defense table, hugged one of his attorneys, then heard a court clerk recite not guilty 5 times. He was whisked out the back door, but he took the lives of 3 people, and he says it was self-defense. Susan, was this an appropriate verdict?
I mean, I wasn't there for all of the testimony, and I wasn't in the jury room, so it's hard to say whether or not it was appropriate. I think I'm concerned that this notion that you can use guns to defend property, which was his express stated purpose of going there, was to help store owners protect their property. And, you know, this idea that someone who is ostensibly an aggressor going somewhere with a weapon, with the intent to use it, can claim self-defense. I think it's very, very dangerous precedent to set.
Appropriate verdict, Mike Wolff?
Yes, I think so, but I start with the same thing Susan just said. I didn't listen to all the evidence. I didn't hear all the facts. The whole question was whether it was reasonable for Rittenhouse to believe that first guy that tried to take his gun away was threatening his life. It didn't appear to me that he did. I think it was an overreaction. My thinking would be that he was guilty of at least negligent injury and possibly manslaughter. Shot him about 6 times when he just grabbed his rifle. But these people saw what was going on. Now, the idea, this is a gun culture up there, just like in Louisiana. People believe you ought to be able to have guns for protection. He went out there as a volunteer to protect against rioters. I think that was silly, but a lot of people think it's fine, and he ought to be able to do it. And I think the society should be able to accommodate people who do that. So I don't blame him just for being there. You see what happened, but it's not criminal to take a rifle down the street and say we're going to protect car lots against rioters.
Well, and you can carry a weapon on your side right here in Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. Louisiana, mm-hmm. legally. Mm-hmm. There's nothing illegal about it. Now, if you conceal it, then it's a crime if you don't have a concealed carry permit. But 2 of the charges were endangering safety, and it would seem that if they didn't want to convict him on homicide, they could have convicted him on that. But they didn't.
Well, and I also think we're ignoring a premise of the law that says, you know, right now in Louisiana, if someone rear-ends you at a stoplight and you don't have insurance, you have no cause of action because you are violating the law and by not having insurance. He had already violated the law by crossing state lines, not having not being the age necessary to carry that weapon. So, you know, this notion that you give up your rights to claim defenses and things like that when you're breaking the law yourself is very disheartening, especially since they dropped that charge from him.
They dropped the charge of being a minor in possession of a weapon because they said it wasn't short enough. Like that law was designed against pistol carrying, Did you understand that?
I didn't. Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me at all. It's like, is it still a weapon? It's a weapon.
What was the remaining illegality in his being there? Mm-hmm. If they dropped the charge, to me that's a technicality.
It will be fascinating to see what happens with this young man's life because
he's a darling of the Crackpot Caucus now. I mean, Tucker Carlson had him on and. You know, said he was a fine human being.
That's
and
today.
He's going to be celebrated.
Let's see what happens because he obviously will be a target and he didn't respond very well to this. How will we respond to that? Yeah. We'll find out. Rose on government. Rose, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Rose. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jim. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I wanted to say happy holidays. I hope everybody's safe and well. I just have to say that I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the three men that killed the black man by chasing him down and shooting him.
In Georgia, I think. And that jury is deliberating as we speak.
And you have to think that African-Americans are very fearful. And there's more white people than there are African-Americans. And they seem to be in the wrong spot right now. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Thank you, Rose.
You know, I saw a meme on Facebook this week that said the criminal justice system in Louisiana, in the United States, is like bleach. It works great for whites, but not so much if you're a person of color.
Stuart in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Stuart.
Yes, thank you. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, and Jim in the audience and your guests. I speak with many related to the Rittenhouse scenario who feel that because the jury and the judge were more pro his side because as a white male he was protecting the interests or he was going against he was trying to go against individuals who were protesting for a quote black cause and the jury and the judge feels like. He's a black person lover, so we have to lock him up. You know, if you're white and you like white and black people, we've got to get you. You know, you can go free.
I seem to recall a name for those kinds of people. I've heard it a time or two.
Whatever that name is, Jim. But that's a great consensus going on out here for many African Americans who feel that way. Well, I just thought I'd share that.
Thank you, Stuart. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Mike.
Well, he's given a totally racial interpretation of the whole thing, and that shows a major problem we've got in our society right now. That's over-racializing
issues. Do you think a black kid would have been
acquitted? Yeah, a black kid wouldn't even walked away alive. Are you kidding me?
No, I don't accept any of that. It may be, but they're saying the media reaction to this was to say if he'd have been black, he'd have been killed, like you just said, or something of that
kind. It's not the media reaction.
No, that's great. That's what I've been
hearing. The majority
hearing.
Of people's reaction. I mean,
but I don't believe that.
Look at the kid, what group? Look at Tamir Rice. Look at all these incidents.
Not in Wisconsin. This is off the top of your head.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. This is systemically across the country. Look at Trayvon Martin, who was walking away from the guy in claimed self-defense. George Zimmerman killed him. We can't get Trayvon's side of the story because he's dead.
Said that he was on top of Zimmerman, slamming his head into the concrete sidewalk before it happened. Now, you weren't there.
All right. Well, does Mr. Wolf, and by the way, I really don't like anonymous emails. If you send me an email, please put your name on it. This is a good question, though. This guy must be a Tiger Droppings fellow, but he says, does Mr. Wolf consider it a problem that the Libertarian Party hasn't held a single office of any importance in this country?
It's a political problem. As James Carville famously said, the problem with the Libertarians is that they don't get any votes. And I have to agree with him. People would pay more attention to Libertarian ideas if some more Libertarians got elected to office. But the main reason, of course, it's a chicken and egg thing. People don't vote for them. They'd pay them more respect if they got elected, but people won't vote because they think there's so few of them, they have no chance to get elected. So
well, redistricting.
Now, there's a
subject. It's apparent the congressional districts are going to most likely stay the way they are unless Governor John Bel Edwards vetoes a plan, and he may. What do you think about Garrett Graves representing a district that includes Baton Rouge, but North Baton Rouge is shoved into Troy Carter's district? Is that fair?
Heck no. That ridiculous congressional plan we have right now is terrible. But don't forget, And we were just talking about Sean Riley, a Democrat we both respect. He told me a little while back, this is the only thing the Republicans and the Black Caucus agree on. It's creating these slave districts, I call them. The second district is a slave district.
That's your word,
and
that's not Sean's word.
No, but mine, I call it a slave district. He says it's something that the Republicans and the Black Caucus agreed on.
You could have a district in New Orleans which would be represented by a Democrat, a Black Democrat, as it was with Bill Jefferson, but he lost to Joseph Gow when he was under indictment, and the panic resulted in putting North Baton Rouge into that district. But in truth, we could have two Democratic districts. And, of course, Garrett Graves doesn't want that because he'd have to switch parties to retain his job. And he's going to try everything he can to keep it. But, Mike, I see you stewing. We'll get your take along with Susan East Nelson when we return. And we'll also hear from Mark Ballard. 877-217-5757. Back with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard of The Advocate on deck, a day early because of Thanksgiving, and we wish you a happy Turkey Day. And if you're so inclined, we'd like to get you in either through email, talk@talklouisiana.org, or by phone, 877-217-5757. Wrapping it up with Susan Nelson, Democratic strategist back in the day, now a lawyer licensed in three states and a professor of law, and Mike Wolfe, the longtime lawyer, barrister, a man from Stanford University who back in the day was a supporter of Richard Milhouse Nixon and then evolved to become the leader of the Libertarian Party in Louisiana, and often speaks from the right side of the spectrum, but occasionally, as we've heard, is no fan of Donald John Trump, does not believe that Trump was a good thing for America or the world at large. But redistricting, that's what we were talking about, Mike, and you were stewing. I wanted to get your take before we let you go. You believe that the Democratic Party has its fingerprints on this as well, as far as these districts being gerrymandered. Why?
Well, of course. The second district is a grotesque gerrymander, and trying to have a district that's 90% Black is ridiculous as trying to make one that's 90% white. Districts should be racially neutral. Race shouldn't enter into it. If you say that Louisiana has a third Black population, a third of the population, if they were spread evenly throughout the state, every district would be a third Black. But they're not evenly spread throughout the state.
Well, the third isn't spread evenly across the state.
I know, that's what I said. Districting should be based on communities of interest.
Right, I agree with you.
And you should unify communities. You don't want to create districts so that nobody has to talk to anyone that disagrees with them. Well, a white candidate doesn't have to talk to a Black voter, or a Black candidate doesn't have to talk to a white voter.
Well, Baton Rouge is essentially a blue city now, and a city that has in its metro area enough people to have its own congressional district. And if it did, it would be a blue district if it had a competitive Democrat. And so Garrett Graves wants to keep it the way it is with North Baton Rouge in New Orleans with Cedric Richmond, now Troy Carter. Susan, Mike says the Black Caucus is equally responsible. Now, they signed off on this, but I think there is evidence now, Ted James being primary mover and shaker, head of the Black Caucus, saying that the current system's not so good.
No, and even if you look at our legislative districts as well, same skewing. You know, Ted James will tell you this himself. He doesn't need a 90% Black district to get elected. And so if we scale the numbers back, we actually could have two majority-minority districts, but by a smaller majority. Where you would have to talk to people, it would force the more moderate candidates, and it's a big problem in our legislature because they drew these districts that are so, you know, skewed toward conservatives and that you have to be a member of the crackpot caucus to get elected.
A phenomenon all across the country. And before you leave, I want to slide Mark Ballard in, and he has written prolifically about redistricting in his last column this past Sunday. He talked about it potentially being a bloodbath. Mark, based on what you're seeing and hearing, this is coming soon to a theater near you, as in early next year. Is it going to be a hostile confrontation at the Capitol?
I would think yes, absolutely. Particularly since there's going to be so many of the legislative districts that are going to have to be changed. I mean, almost half of them are going to have to be changed. And then the congressional districts, are still going to, what was it, 80,000 people have left rural North Louisiana, which means that the two congressmen in North Louisiana, something is going to have to change. They're either going to have to, if they want to keep the vertical configuration. I mean, you're looking at Mike Johnson going from Oil City all the way to Houma. And so I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. I should have called a little earlier, but the recent parade attack where the man, Daryl Brooks, ran over five people, killed or six people, do you think that's related to the Kyle Rittenhouse testimony? And is Black Lives Matter responsible, and should they be held financially liable like the white supremacists in Charlottesville?
All right.
Okay, the guy in Kenosha had a criminal record of already running over his estranged wife with a car. He should have been in jail on bond, but there was an issue with him.
Waukesha.
Sorry, Waukesha, not Kenosha. You're right, Waukesha. In Waukesha, and it was a failure of the criminal justice system. That, plain and simple, that guy has no allegiance to anybody. He has a long criminal rap sheet. This guy is just a criminal who was in, did some terrible damage.
Well, as the New York Times reported a few weeks ago, Louisiana's had the highest murder rate per capita in the nation, 32 consecutive years, 32 consecutive years. Based on what's going on, does that mean we're going to have more of this gun legislation that is prevalent in Louisiana? I think I was going to ask Mark that, but I think we have lost Mark for a moment, and I'd like to get him back on that. But we've had a series of bills, some of which have passed. Mike Wolf, more guns or less?
How can you get any more? We've got in our Constitution now that the gun rights are more protected than any other right. I don't see what more they could do.
And you're a Second Amendment guy.
I believe in the Second Amendment, yes, and I think right. people ought to have the right to have.
Well, I want to get Mark on this. Mark, your thoughts about gun legislation, which crops up, and of course we had an expanded concealed carry that Governor Edwards was against, and his veto was upheld. Does that mean that it stops, or are we going to have more discussion about this at the Capitol?
We're going to have a lot more discussion about this at the Capitol. Gun rights is an issue that is automatic identification for some of our conservative legislators, and so they're going to continue to go after it.
All right, David in Atlanta, you're on with Mark Ballard. Good morning, sir. David, you have the floor.
I believe you've written about this, Mr. Ballard. Clay Sexsnyder, the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Baton Rouge, evidently has drawn a red line opposing Governor Edwards and the State Board of Health vaccinating children, I think, between 6 and 12 in order to be admitted to public school. Mr. Sexsnyder is adamantly opposed to it. And what is the mentality and the thinking of these Republicans where they put politics before the life and safety of children? It's totally insane.
Your thoughts, Mark Ballard.
Well, I think definitely it is political, but it's coming, I think, from a national perspective in that the Republicans nationally have gone against based on, individual freedom against these vaccinations, required vaccinations. Interestingly, in Louisiana, that the during the rulemaking process, there was not a single opposition comment when those rules could have been changed. Then they kind of seem to have been surprised by it, that the rule has made it through the rulemaking process, and that's the next steps that they can do is that they need to each chamber needs to hold the hearing on it. And then they need to say that they want to get rid of the rule, and then the governor has to agree with that to get rid of the rule, and he does not show any inclination to do so. So it was interesting that they missed their most opportune time to actually step in.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org to get in with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief Advocate and Picayune. And Tom on Bluebonnet asks about Governor Edwards and his role in redistricting. How powerful can he be, or will he be, if he wants to be?
Well, he can veto.
Well, he can veto, but Mark, will he veto or will he just let nature take its course? Because based on what we heard from Representative Stefanski on Monday, it appears that the status quo is going to be the preferable option for the Republican majority.
Right. What Mr. Stefanski was saying is that these maps have got to pass the legislature. And what we've heard, the governor's has not really come out and said what he thought the guardrails ought to be. But if he vetoes, if it doesn't follow along with what he wants to see, then the veto comes and they have to override the veto. And if they can't override the veto, they have to redraw the maps. And if they can't redraw the maps that they agree with, then it's going to go to federal court.
All right.
And they'll redraw the maps.
And the governor on his radio show, he used a line that's been used before, but it's true. He said people should be choosing representatives, not representatives choosing the people they represent. So, and this is what we have now because people want to get elected. And the people who are elected are in office because of the current system. So naturally, and Stefanski, to his credit, said this, they lean toward keeping things the way they are. Another listener asks about this LSU coaching search, which apparently is nearing an end. I would be surprised if a week from now if we don't know who the next LSU football coach is. But I saw Scott Woodward yesterday at DiGiulio's. He had a nice haircut, and he looked like a man without a care in the world. So I have a feeling the hay is in the barn. But Andrea Gallo's been writing about Title IX, and some of these so-called top candidates have issues with players and sexual misconduct. Will this be an issue, or does winning trump everything once again, Mark Ballard?
Well, you know, the easy answer is winning trumps everything. But because of the problems that LSU has had over the last year or so, that become public over the last year or so, the university is going to have no choice but to address Title IX, regardless of who they choose.
Well, it's a case in which Jimbo Fisher, the guy that's got Woodward hired at Texas A&M, he's got problems, and he's a person who's mentioned as a possible candidate, and he'll be in town Saturday as LSU plays Texas A&M. The Aggies are 6.5-point favorites, by the way. We'll get Mark Ballard's take on who the next coach might be and more, and you still have time to get in with this erudite man. 877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number, talk@talklouisiana.org, and we're back after this quick pause with more of our show. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard is with us for a few more moments, 877-217-5757, and we were talking about the LSU coaching situation, and it's apparent now that if Coach Orgeron were a candidate today, he would most likely not be hired because he has a history of domestic abuse in his own career, his personal life, him personally. Repeated assaults on a woman alleged in Miami caused a restraining order in 1992, and he was hired nonetheless. But today is a new day, and some of these issues that have been on the back burner are now on the front burner, and that's a good thing. But Mark, as we look at the LSU coaching situation, nobody is perfect, but some of the better candidates have some issues that have not been resolved. And because of that, Scott Woodward may be inclined to play it safe. Your thoughts about who the coach might be?
Well, if only Scott Woodward would listen to me. And I really don't know. I mean, I'm sure that he's going to have to pick big name, a marquee type of candidate, but is he going to be able to pull someone like the coach from Oklahoma, which also has a fairly storied football program, to LSU? And that's a big question. Maybe Dave Aranda, who's kind of a doesn't have any of this in his background, and also is kind of a low key fellow, and no drama sort of coach. Then maybe he might be up for it, though I imagine Baylor doesn't want to have two of its top coaches taken away from it. So I will be surprised and exhilarated to learn in the next week or so what the outcome is going to be.
All right. A few questions unrelated to this. Scott in Central says, Jim, speaking of the Clinton budget deal in 1993, Dick Armey warned that it would lead to economic disaster because it included a wealth tax on rich people. Also, the Republicans claim that the tax cuts for business and rich people will lead to balanced budgets, which, of course, never happens. Yet we're continuing to have these same issues over supply-side economics, which has been proved time and again not to work as far as balancing budgets. It creates bigger deficits. Mark, and it appears that our congressional delegation is largely all in on this, disregarding the record of the past. Your thoughts?
Well, he's not wrong. And of course, I'm more fluent with the state budget, which has to be balanced. And there, and it seems like, I mean, at least to me, that what you got to have the money in the pocket, or you got to be able to cut down on your spending. And that seems to be the best way to go after a budget. However, on the national level, they're using the budget as a way to spur the economy. And he's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the supply side economics has not worked over the last few decades, or three or four decades, and
it's never worked as far as balancing budgets. Now the economy has been stimulated, but just like it's stimulated when we have these plans in which money is spent on infrastructure. But before we go, a listener, this happened. The story was Friday. It happened last Thursday after Mark left us, but it regarded John Kennedy's attack, our senator, on Saleh Omarova, who is the nominee to lead the Office of Comptroller of the Currency from President Biden. And Kennedy, in his questioning of her, said, I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade. Now, Smiley Anders, your colleague, was on the show last week and said Kennedy should resign from the Senate for saying such a thing. Kennedy is one not to shrink when it comes to attacking people, especially women. We've seen him do it with Nancy Pelosi. He seems to relish piling on females who are in his target zone, and usually starts it with, all due respect, it must suck to be that dumb. But John Kennedy, I knew him as the guy who was Paul Tomplay calling for an environmental scorecard under Buddy Romer, who was pro-choice on abortion. What got into Senator Kennedy, Mark Ballard?
I still think it's politics, although they argue with me saying that it was a genuine conversion. But I still think it was politics, and the way to win and be a U.S. senator, he tried three times, as we recall. I mean, it was to go this route, and he goes this route with gusto.
And your colleague Stephanie Grace will be on the show, and she said she got a lot of response, pro and con, from her column about Senator Kennedy on his 70th birthday. There was a column about him in The Advocate last Sunday, and we wish Senator Kennedy well on his 70th birthday as he starts year number 71, and it'll be a re-election year for him, and Mark will be following it with you. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to you. One of the best in the business anywhere in North America or any other place in the globe, Mark Ballard. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Jim. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. And speaking of Thanksgiving, we're joined by one of the most accomplished children's authors in the country, Patrick Reynolds. He is a man who has had several bestsellers, and including The North Star, The Dot, and his latest is Our Table, which has what would, I think, be construed as a Thanksgiving theme. And Peter Reynolds, good morning to you. Peter H. Reynolds, it's nice to visit with you, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Well, Peter, you write for young people, and this is something that is not easily done, especially for a man of the world, an older fellow. You're almost as old as I am, and you just keep doing it and keep churning out these bestsellers. But this one, as I said, has a Thanksgiving theme to it. I think all of us presumably will gather at some table tomorrow. Your thoughts about appealing to young people and getting their glimpse of, or their view of the world in your books?
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm in my studio just outside of Boston, and happy to connect with all of your listeners who are preparing their tables. I came up with this book, Our Table, really as a cautionary tale to remind all of us, really, because this, while it looks like a children's book. It's a picture book for all ages. It's a cautionary tale to just kind of keep technology in balance. I see so many cell phones out, especially during meals at restaurants. I see families with their cell phones out, and they are someplace else and not at their table. And so I wanted to create a fable about a table to remind people that the important stuff is actually being together, human beings talking to each other, connected.
Well, the book is about Violet, and you say she fondly remembered the table, gathering food, preparing the table, cooking meals, lighting candles, so many stories, laughter, singing, celebrating, sharing, making memories together. And recently, Violet found herself alone at the table. Her family become very busy. They had found new places to be. And as you note, these new places involve these contraptions, these gadgets we have. Are we becoming less engaged because of these? Is that the point?
Yeah. The entertainment industry and social media industry, the gaming industry, they are really smart people, and they know how to get our attention and to keep it for a very long time. And, you know, in the book, the father's sitting in front of his big TV, the mom's on the staircase, texting away, posting and scrolling on Facebook and other social media platforms. And the brother is in his room playing multiplayer games. Of course, the irony is that she sees, Violet sees her brother playing with all these friends, but friends she can't see. And that leaves her alone and quite baffled, especially baffled because she is the only one in the house that notices that her dining room table, their dining room table, is beginning to shrink, and it begins to shrink faster and faster. So the more time her family spends on their devices and not with each other, the faster it shrinks until she can actually hold it in her hands. She blinks and it disappears. And it's up to Violet to figure out how to bring her family back together again.
Peter Hamilton Reynolds, one of the most accomplished children's authors in the world. The book is Our Table. And he has a fascinating backstory himself. You're an identical twin, aren't you?
I am, yes. I was not born alone. Born with my best friend, Paul, who is also an artist and a writer himself. And this book is dedicated to him and his wife, who have a pretty spectacular table. It's spectacular because they bring people together. They're kind of famous for bringing the family and friends together at the table. People who don't have a place to be, they will invite to the table. And they have this marvelous tradition where they have a tablecloth. They started this 25 years ago, tablecloth. At the end of the meal, they hand you a pencil and they ask you to sign the tablecloth. And when you leave, Janet, who's handy with needle and thread, embroiders your signature onto the tablecloth to join hundreds of signatures from the past decade, two and a half decades.
Well, the book is beautiful, Peter, and it is Our Table. But Violet, I think it's fair to say, is depicted as a young girl of color. And as you know, back in the day, this was not done. But you're a best-selling author, and I think it's great to have inclusion, even in children's literature.
Absolutely. Well, I try to reflect my audience, and I think I've got about 75 books to my name now. And so I'm always looking for a diverse cast to reflect my readers. And my family, my dad was born in Argentina. My mother's from England. Grandfather's from New Zealand. So we're a journey family. And I'm trying to write stories for the whole planet.
Well, thank you. Congratulations on Our Table from Peter H. Reynolds. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.